mirnih manifestacij, na katerih so na številne probleme želele opozoriti različne aktivistične skupine iz celega sveta, so se udeležile tudi mnoge okoljevarstvene skupine. Okoljevarstveniki so namreč zaskrbljeni zaradi vse močnejšega pritiska ZDA na Evropsko unijo, pa tudi zaradi pritiskov, ki jih na posamezne evropske države izvajajo mednarodne finančne institucije.
Friends of the Earth je največja mednarodna mreža okoljevarstvenih skupin na svetu. Se povezuje ekološke skupine iz kar 68 držav. Krati predstavlja eno izmed vodilnih tako imenovanih skupin pritiska. To je seveda pritisk na politike in finančnike v Veliki Britaniji. Friends of the Earth oziroma v prevodu Prijatelji zemlje se ukvarjajo na primer z izredno natančnimi raziskavami, ki jih imajo določeni posegi ali izvajanje določene politike na okolje, ter hkrati javnosti predstavljajo potrebne informacije, ki zadevajo temo okolja.
Prostovoljci mreže Friends of the Earth pravijo, da so v zadnjih letih zmagali v številnih bitkah z vlado, industrijo in Evropsko unijo, ter tako na primer uspeli zmanjšati trgovino z lesom iz brazilskih pragozdov, pripomogli k zvišanju podpore za čistejše energetske tehnologije in tako dalje. Prepričani so namreč, da je naš planet na tisoče let ohranil čudovito, izjemno bogato ter med seboj močno prepleteno mrežo življenja, zdaj pa jo človeštvo ogroža do te mere, da ji grozi uničenje.
Friends of the Earth so prva okoljevarstvena skupina v Veliki Britaniji, ki je začela kampanje za kite, ogrožene živalske vrste in tropske pragozdove ter kampanje proti kislemu dežju in klimatskim spremembam. Danes se tako posvečajo na primer kampanji za drugačno kmetijstvo, pa kampanji za preprečevanje onesnaževanja ozračja, nadzor nad nevarnimi kemikalijami, zaščito ozonskega plašča in ne nazadnje kampanji za zmanjševanje uporabe jedrske energije.
Direktor Svetovne trgovinske organizacije je nedavno svetovne gospodarske voditelje opozoril, da bi imelo nespoštovanje rokov za sprostitev svetovne trgovine na področju kmetijstva, ki jih je za konec leta 2004 določila konferenca Svetovne trgovinske organizacije v Dohi, uničujoče posledice za globalno ekonomijo. Kaj to dejansko pomeni, je bilo prvo vprašanje za Eve Mitchell, tiskovno predstavnico britanske ekološke mreže Prijatelji zemlje, s katero se je v Solunu pogovarjal Goran.
Well, according to what the WTO is trying to do in terms of freeing up trade, as they call it, around the world, according to that agenda, it probably would be damaging. But actually, us at Friends of the Earth believe that, in fact, what is happening with agriculture within the WTO is bad for the environment and bad for farmers around the world. And in fact, food and agriculture should come out of the WTO altogether.
Can you explain a little bit more?
Well, what we see is the World Bank and IMF working very closely, their policies working very closely with the World Trade Organization. And what that is developing all around the world, particularly in developing countries, is agriculture that is designed to produce food for export, not designed to feed the people in the country. And we believe that local food production for local consumption and allowing countries to control their own agriculture is much better than having the WTO try and run agriculture in a one-size-fits-all set of rules.
Kar se v zvezi s svetovno trgovinsko organizacijo dogaja v kmetijstvu je, kot pravi Eve Mitchell, škodljivo tako za okolje, kot tudi za kmete po vsem svetu. Prav zato bi svetovna trgovinska organizacija področje hrane in kmetijstva morala pustiti pri miru. Svetovna banka in mednarodni denarni sklad skupaj s svetovno trgovinsko organizacijo v nerazvitih državah spodbujata kmetijstvo, ki je usmerjeno v proizvodnjo hrane za izvoz, medtem ko bi moralo biti usmerjeno v proizvodnjo hrane za lokalno prebivalstvo. Prijatelji zemlje so zato prepričani, da je lokalna proizvodnja hrane za lokalno potrošnjo ter to, da državam dovolijo, da same skrbijo za svoje kmetijstvo, veliko boljše od tega, da ga po pravilu ena oblika razvoja je primerna za vse, upravlja svetovna trgovinska organizacija.
Aktualni direktor Svetovne trgovinske organizacije trdi, da bo prosta trgovina na področju kmetijstva zmanjšala revščino, spodbudila razvoj in okrepila mednarodno varnost. Kaj pa o tem misli Eve Mitchell?
Well, again, they do claim to be pursuing what they call free trade, but we believe very much that free trade is not fair trade. And in fact, what happens is, as I said before, he's right. Agriculture, this kind of export agriculture, has become very, very important for a number of countries because the IMF has forced countries to base their entire economy on producing food for export, primarily to the wealthy people in the north, so that we can keep our food cheap in our supermarkets. And in fact, interfering with that game plan now, while countries are still forced to keep their economies based in that way, will be damaging for them. And again, as I said, what we should be doing is allowing countries to run their own agriculture and encouraging local food production for local consumption.
Prijatelji zemlje so torej prepričani, da svobodna trgovina ni pravična trgovina. Dejansko ima direktor Svetovne trgovinske organizacije prav, ko pravi, da je takšna oblika kmetijstva postala izredno pomembna za številne države. In sicer zato, ker jih je mednarodni denarni sklad prisilil v to, da zdaj njihovo celotno gospodarstvo temelji na proizvodnji hrane za izvoz. Predvsem seveda zato, da bi bogati ljudje na severu v supermarketih lahko kupovali poceni hrano. Radikalno vmešavanje v takšen sistem bi zato v tem trenutku, ko njihova ekonomija še vedno temelji na izvozu hrane, pomenilo veliko škodo za gospodarstvo teh držav. Prav zato, pravijo prijatelji zemlje, bi država morali dovoliti, da same upravljajo svoje gospodarstvo ter spodbujati lokalno proizvodnjo hrane za lokalne potrebe.
Pa so prijatelji zemlje prepričani, da bi takšen pristop zmanjšal revščino v svetu?
We think that it would reduce poverty to break this cycle because we believe that the kind of economic theory that is being pursued by the World Bank right now is fundamentally flawed and that what they're doing doesn't actually have any proof behind it that it will reduce poverty. They claim it will reduce poverty. We ask the government, we ask the World Bank, over and over again, where's the proof? How do you know? And what we say is that allowing countries to manage their own economies is the way Britain and the US and Japan and every developed country controlled its own economy as it developed. And now all of a sudden those developed countries want to stop developing countries using those same kinds of techniques to develop. And we say, that's not fair. There's no proof that it's going to work. And in fact, it's starting to have a very neo-colonial kind of feel to what's happening with those economies.
Is there any possibility that maybe such politics sparked another Zapatista rising in some other parts of the world?
Well, we are concerned about what's going to happen as these kind of policies progress, and particularly as we believe begin to fail and begin to be proved to fail. However, I think what we're also seeing is a very interesting dynamic right now, where in the last few weeks, the agriculture negotiation deadlines have failed, the general agreement and trade and services negotiations have failed. We know that another set of negotiations called special and differential treatment that are supposed to help developing countries cope with all of this change, they are failing. And also some very, very important negotiations on access to medicines, particularly for HIV and malaria and cases like that, are also failing. So all of the very important negotiations in the WTO are failing. And hopefully, from our point of view at Friends of the Earth, what will happen is the WTO will be proved to be an ineffective and inappropriate way to organize these kind of rules, and will be able to go into that space that's created by that failure and put forward a new agenda.
Prijatelji zemlje so torej prepričani, da bi pristop k kmetijstvu, kakršnega zagovarjajo sami, zmanjšal stopnjo lakote in revščine. Hkrati trdijo, da je ekonomska teorija, na kateri sloni politika Svetovne trgovinske organizacije, povsem majava. Nimajo namreč nobenega dokaza, da bo njihova politika resnično zmanjšala revščino, kar seveda trdijo. Vendar brez dokazov nikakor ne morejo vedeti.
Britanska ekološka mreža Friends of the Earth, ki že od leta 1971 dalje z intenzivnimi kampanjami poskuša zaščititi okolje in ustaviti njegovo uničevanje, pa ima tudi svoj lastni program kmetijske politike. Za kakšno obliko pravzaprav gre, še naprej pojasnjuje njegova tiskovna predstavnica Eve Mitchell.
We believe, well, the basis of our sustainable agricultural belief is, as I said, local production for local consumption. And it also avoids things like genetically modified food. It is based on trying to move away from the kinds of very intensive industrial agriculture that seemed appropriate after the Second World War, because there wasn't enough food to go around and we really needed to increase production. What we find now is that in the world there is more than enough food to feed everyone. The reason there is hunger is that there's a political problem getting the food into the mouths where it's needed. So we believe very much in trying to change the way agriculture is geared and address the political problems of hunger while allowing people to produce the kind of food they want in the way they want to.
It's one case in Cuba. Cuba has very good sustainable agriculture, but it's because of the all political circumstances. Is there one of the way how to organize agriculture?
Well, they do have their way of organizing their agriculture, and particularly because of the US sanctions that have been aimed at them for such a long time, they have some kinds of problems with their exports and trade and that sort of thing. Obviously, they have to be very careful about the way they organize their economy. And it's not to say it's a perfect system. They do have problems. Everybody's got problems. It's a complicated world. But we do believe that it would increasing local production for local consumption would also cut down on things like food miles, where we see in this country, in England, this time of year you get apples that are grown in New Zealand and then flown on an airplane halfway around the world so that we can have apples out of season. And the amount of carbon dioxide that dumps into the atmosphere is bad. The amount of packaging that is required to do that is bad. All of that needs to change. And it's not, we're not advocating that you don't get to eat apples, but isn't it better to try and have them from France, even if it costs a little bit more to organize at this time of year, than the kind of environmental and social damage it does, bringing them all the way from Chile or New Zealand?
Temelj takšne alternativne oblike kmetijstva je torej lokalna proizvodnja za lokalno potrošnjo, ki se izogiba uporabi genetsko modificirane hrane in zavrača intenzivno industrijsko kmetijstvo, ki se je zdelo primerno po drugi svetovni vojni, ko hrane ni bilo dovolj. Zdaj, ko vidimo, da je na svetu več kot dovolj hrane, je jasno, da je razlog za lakoto političen. Gre namreč za problem, kako dostaviti hrano na območja, kjer je potrebna.
Politika Svetovne trgovinske organizacije je del splošnega sporazuma o prosti trgovini. Ali to pomeni, da je Svetovna trgovinska organizacija slaba za ljudi in za planet, pa je naslednje vprašanje za tiskovno predstavnico Friends of the Earth.
The General Agreement on Trade and Services is one set of new negotiations that the WTO is trying to push through. It's not doing very well. We think that overall, all of those kinds of negotiations under the WTO, the services, the agriculture, the access to medicines, as I said before, they're all failing. And we think that's no surprise, really, because we believe that the basis of the WTO is flawed. Free trade doesn't work. We were promised that there would be this kind of trickle-down effect, where if you give money to rich people, it will trickle down to poor people eventually. That clearly has not happened. What has happened is we've given lots of money to rich people and they've kept it. And poor people are getting poorer and poorer and the gap is opening up. And that is what free trade does. That is what these kind of policies do. And that's not right. It's not fair and it needs to change.
Eve Mitchell trdi, da so se za napačne in škodljive izkazali vsi visokoleteči sporazumi mednarodnih finančnih teles. Prosta trgovina enostavno ne deluje, pravijo prijatelji Zemlje. Obljube, da bo denar potoval od bogatih k revnim, se namreč niso uresničile. Čeprav smo ogromno denarja zdajali bogatim, se kapital ni pretakal naprej, ampak so bogati denar enostavno obdržali. Revni tako postajajo še bolj revni, razlika med bogatimi in revnimi pa le še narašča. In to je dejansko posledica proste trgovine, pravijo prijatelji Zemlje.
Pa naš planet sploh obstaja znotraj politike Svetovne trgovinske organizacije. Eve Mitchell na to odgovarja.
Well, it's a tricky question. You may remember that there was an Earth Summit in Johannesburg last August. One of the things that came out of that summit was that there are these international agreements on the way environmental issues should be handled. That Earth Summit seemed to us to be the appropriate place to talk about those kind of issues. What in fact happened was, because of all sorts of political lobbying by big business and powerful countries, what happened was that meeting in Johannesburg decided that decisions about how environmental treaties should be reviewed and upheld and everything should be given to the WTO. So in fact, what's happened is the WTO now has control over not only trade and these kind of bad effects that it has, but it also has the decision over whether or not it pays any attention to the international environmental treaties that have been worked out. Now, clearly, that is just silly. That is not going to work because we know from the way the WTO already works that they will choose trade and money every time. So the environment doesn't really feature very well in the WTO. This question about these international environmental treaties will come up in the next big ministerial meeting, which is going to happen in Cancun in Mexico in September, where this final decision is meant to be held. And we will obviously be campaigning very strongly that the decisions about the way the environment is respected should not be left up to the WTO. It needs to be held outside, and those treaties need to be respected.
Svetovna trgovinska organizacija ima danes nadzor ne le nad trgovino, temveč se lahko tudi sama odloča, kdaj bo spoštovala okoljevarstvene sporazume in kdaj ne. Pri tem je seveda popolnoma jasno, da bo vedno in zmeraj dajala prednost času in kapitalu.
Once this magnificent animal swam freely in the seas, but now held captive for human greed. A miserable life behind bars and concrete walls. No companion killer whales to hear its calls. Yes, I'm sickened by what I've seen, and the mass Faroe Islands pirate whale slaughter is obscene. Brainwashed and desensitized for 24 years, my eyes don't easily fill with tears. But when I watched those whales scream and die, the tears ran freely from my eyes. To see them murdered, hacked apart, it's like something tearing inside my heart. Yet there is hope, and I still believe that one day such creatures might all swim free. Peaceful coexistence, no fear, no need to hide. Ourselves and whales, together, side by side.
Imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
Svetovni mediji so o dogajanjih v vrhu poročali izredno skopo. Takšnemu pokrivanju so se seveda priključili tudi slovenski mediji. Osrednja državna tiskovna agencija je iz dneva v dan le ponavljala, koliko oborožencev skrbi za varnost demokratično izbranih evropskih politikov, ter navajala, kako skrajni protestniki povzročajo izgrede in proti policistom in izložbam trgovin mečejo molotovke. Takšne medije zanima le senzacija, zato se osredotočajo na število vrženih molotov, ki je na ranjenih policistov, medtem ko običajno prezrejo sporočilo, ki ga protestniki s svojimi manifestacijami želijo posredovati. Zastopanje stališč nasprotovanja Evropski uniji in kapitalizmu tako v novinarskih prispevkih najpogosteje označujejo z besedama huliganstvo in divjanje.
Prav zaradi skopega in pogosto izredno zavajajočega poročanja svetovnih medijev so aktivisti poskrbeli tudi za medijsko pokrivanje dogodkov. Prepričani so, da je to edini način, da javnosti posredujejo konkretne informacije o dogajanju na ulicah ter svet seznanijo z idejami, ki jih zagovarjajo. Neodvisni medijski centri niso rezervirani za novinarje. V njih lahko aktivno sodeluje vsakdo, ki ima koristne informacije in jih želi posredovati širši javnosti.
Informacije in materiale za neodvisne medijske centre zbirajo aktivisti, ki se nahajajo na kraju dogodka. Gre predvsem za informacije, ki bi jih mainstream mediji prezrli ali pa jih namerno ne bi objavili. Prav zaradi takšnega zavajajočega poročanja o dogodkih na ulicah različnih svetovnih mest so se oblikovali neodvisni medijski centri, ki so, tako kot v primeru prejšnjih protikapitalističnih akcij, uživo poročali tudi o dogodkih na ulicah Soluna.
O tem, kaj neodvisni medijski center sploh je, smo se pogovarjali z medijsko aktivistko Michelle iz San Francisca. Kaj torej je indie media?
Indie media is basically a group of independent journalists and media activists who came together to try and form an alternative outlet for news in response to the mainstream corporate media, which, as we all know, you know, has its own interests and certainly distorts coverage and doesn't cover a lot of the things that activists are concerned about, that people are concerned about. It started during the protests in Seattle in 1999. And initially it came about as a space to offer any kind of alternative media makers a place during the protests to have access to computers, to fax machines, to all different kinds of equipment. And from there, it sort of evolved into an ongoing website which offers anybody the opportunity to put up alternative information, be it, you know, on coverage of daily events, be it on coverage of sort of larger mass mobilizations. At this point, there's radio coverage. You can post audio stuff up on the web. You can post video. You can post photos and, of course, written articles.
Mm-hmm. So what are the main principles, again, of the indie media?
To me, and again, like, you're talking to one person who works as part of an open global collective, so we have many, many different perspectives as far as what are the guiding principles. I think that one really, really important issue for me is that anybody can be a media maker, and indie media offers people the opportunity to just turn on their computer and publish their news. There's an open news wire where you just click a couple buttons and you become a media maker, and that's a big point, is that we don't really have any sort of editorial process that pre-screens what goes up there, so that anything goes up, and then there's a comment section at the end of any article or any video or anything that gets posted where the reader can be a participant and can feedback their comments on whatever got said, and it becomes sort of a forum for open information exchange.
Does mainstream media use the indie media like for source, uses information that indie media provides?
Yes, at this point I think they do. It was originally conceived as sort of both an outlet in and of itself for people to have access to this news, and also as a content provider, so that, you know, any sort of non-commercial publication is welcome to pick up any of our material that gets posted. And we have seen lately during certain actions, you know, say, for instance, the protests in Quebec against the free trade area of the Americas, we definitely noticed that there were mainstream news sources that were citing indie media because we were sort of had such comprehensive coverage of what was going on.
After Seattle?
At this point, we have over 40 sites internationally on different continents. We're growing daily and basically are trying to get as much of the world covered as possible. We have sort of now a main sort of site that we consider the global indie media site, which points to all of the existing sites, and you can go and check out news in any location from local people who are doing the coverage.
Can you maybe just count a few indie media like around the world? Which are they?
Sure. We're primarily, the most sites are located in the United States and in North America, but we have sites, sort of, there was a Prague site during S26, there's a site in the Congo, there's sites in Australia, in a number of parts of Europe, South America, Central America as well. There was a very active site during the actions in Chiapas. So again, it's all over.
Do you have permanent coverage of the events, or only from event to event?
We find that a lot of sites have sprung up when there is a major mass mobilization happening. So, for instance, in Quebec or as I said, in Prague, or in LA during the protests against the Democratic Convention. So that has been a model, that things will start during the event, but we also have many sites that have come into being sort of just based on local concerns in general. And yes, most of the sites, you know, that do start with a major event tend to be in existence afterwards, and it's an ongoing coverage, so that any sort of local information, you know, that isn't necessarily pertaining in any way to the anti-globalization movement, but, you know, pertains to any sort of local concerns, will be covered on an ongoing daily basis. And we try and update, you know, for instance, I'm from San Francisco and I work primarily on the site there, and we try and cover every kind of event that may be happening in the area and any sort of things that generally are not covered by the mainstream media or, as I said before, are distorted by the mainstream media.
So how would you say that the indie media coverage like look like that is different from like other media, for example?
Well, I think that one primary aspect is that the media makers themselves are activists, that many of us would be concerned about these issues, would be present at, you know, at protests or be working within different activist groups. And this is simply a media outlet for people who are working on this stuff, which is one major thing, because you see a lot of times in corporate coverage, people have no idea what the hell they're talking about and, you know, sort of where they're coming from. Whereas indie media offers an opportunity for anybody to get their important issues out in the public.
Your readers, your listeners?
I think that it's growing every day. Initially, I think to some extent, the people who tend to get on the website were people who were concerned about a lot of the issues that we cover already. A lot of activists, you know, sort of get information on what's going on in different parts of the world, you know, by going onto our website. But ideally, of course, we want to reach an even wider audience. We want to sort of get the message out to as many people as possible who aren't already thinking about a lot of these issues. And I think that one really important way that we sort of hope to diversify the public that tunes into indie media is by diversifying the mediums that we use, so that while we're primarily web-based, a lot of people are working on print versions. A lot of times what we'll have is PDF files so that anybody can print out this information and distribute it in the streets, which is extremely effective. For instance, during May Day in San Francisco, we handed out a zine, you know, to anybody standing on the side of the street, just about events that had happened in Quebec and things that were being covered lately in general. And likewise, there are recorded, you know, audio tapes that have been distributed. There's a video program called the Newsreel, which puts together a lot of different video footage and can sort of be distributed to anybody who has access to a VCR.
So, how do people get involved with indie media?
There's a number of ways of getting involved. As I said earlier, anybody can be an indie media journalist. All you have to do is turn on your computer and press two buttons and you can publish your material. So that's a really big point, is that there's access for anybody, of course, who has access to the computer. As far as sort of setting up a new indie media site or something of that nature, a lot of our decisions are made on listserv, and it's a public listserv. There's a number of them pertaining to different locations and different aspects. But people, you can just get on and sign up for a listserv and start participating and throwing in your opinion, and it becomes as valid as anybody else's opinion who's already involved. And if people were interested in, for instance, say, starting a bulk in indie media, it just sort of takes a bit of organization to figure out what sort of infrastructure you might have already existing in the area, and getting together a group of people who would like to be involved in the collective, and sort of just throwing that out to existing indie media folks to see about the possibility of starting one up.
What about the authorities? How do they respond to the indie media work or actions? Or,
well, it's interesting because perhaps it's an indicator of the fact that we are being effective in what we're doing, that they've become more and more repressive towards us. Sort of at many different protests, you know, I'm most familiar with what's gone down in the States, but we've seen authorities raiding indie media centers, we've seen interruptions in satellite broadcasts. And one extremely major event was that in Seattle, there was a time when the FBI came in and started to sequester logs from things that had gotten posted on our site and subpoenaed some of this information. So at this point, I think that charges have been dropped, but they're basically, you know, looking to try and shut us down.
Control the life. All of them. We create human nature. In the end, they'll meet you. Sooner or later, they'll tear you to pieces. What is it, this principle?
I don't know. The spirit of man.
If you want a vision of the
like,
future,
is there a set model or is there, like, this flexible?
I think it's a really important point that there's a lot of flexibility there. An indie media center itself may exist in a physical location, as we have one in Seattle or New York, and you know there are other existing physical indie media spaces. Or, for instance, in San Francisco, it's simply sort of a cyberspace where people, you know, volunteer and use their own equipment from home and get involved to whatever extent they can without there being so much of a physical space. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as far as starting new indie media sites. It can be whatever's applicable to the regional location that it would be happening. So, you know, if people around here were interested and it was pertinent to try and sort of get a physical space where people could come in and have computer access, you know, that's certainly a possibility. Or if it's something where it would be more more decentralized and more sort of just people chipping in from home, that's a possibility as well. And as we expand and as we get more and more indie media sites, I think that we'll see more and more of a diversity in the way that they're set up, because hopefully and ideally what needs to happen is that the indie media site itself becomes based on whatever works best for the people who are involved in their particular location.
Rats. little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help.
Grške oblasti neodvisnega medijskega centra in medijskih aktivistov niso ovirale pri njihovem poročanju o dogodkih na ulicah Soluna. Precej drugače pa se neodvisnih medijskih glasov loteva italijanska oblast, ki je s 1. julijem prevzela predsedovanje Evropski uniji. Italijanski premier Silvio Berlusconi, znan medijski mogotec, ki ima v lasti večino najpomembnejših italijanskih nacionalnih komercialnih televizijskih mrež, s pomočjo položaja predsednika vlade pa nadzira tudi vse tri programe italijanske državne televizije RAI, seveda ni najbolj naklonjen neodvisnim medijskim podvigom. Kakšna usoda čaka neodvisne medije v Evropski uniji pod predsedstvom Rima, pa se je morda najbolj nazorno pokazalo prav v primeru poskusa utišanja italijanske indie medije.
Italijanska policija je pol leta po protestih ob vrhu 8 najbogatejših držav in Rusije v Genovi vdrla v več zasedenih poslopij na različnih koncih Italije. Do velike mobilizacije policijskih sil, v katero je bilo vključenih ogromno avtomobilov, maric in pripadnikov specialnih enot, ne bi prišlo po ukazu sodnikov iz Genove. Odvetnika obtožbe sta namreč zahtevala, naj policija zaseže celoten audio in video material, ki je kakorkoli povezan s protesti ob vrhu voditeljev G8, ki so julija 2001 potekali v Genovi. Zanimali so jih predvsem posnetki, ki so bili povezani s krvavo policijsko racijo v alternativnem medijskem centru ter masakrom, ki so ga italijanski karabinjeri izvedli v šoli Dias Pertini.
O tem smo se v Solunu pogovarjali s Francescom, aktivistom Rimske agencije za družbene informacije. Kot poudarja Francesco, je šlo za ostre in obenem prve konkretne napade na svobodo informiranja po vnovičnem prihodu Berlusconija na oblast. Kot prva sta bila na udaru prav italijanska indie media in neodvisni rimski radio Onda Rossa z več kot 25-letno tradicijo, ki sta izredno pomembna za gibanje v Italiji. Čeprav se ne ve, kateri neodvisni mediji bi lahko bili naslednji na seznamu preganjanih, je jasno, da hočejo italijanske oblasti onemogočiti delovanje neodvisnih medijev. Zakaj pa so si za prvi obračun izbrale prav indie medijo?
Because indie media represent now the most important aspect of spread information. The Genoa days represented for the independent media here in Italy a very important date, because we worked all together and we gave the concrete demonstration that we can do information within spread of correspondence of journalists, and in the media is now representing the open channel with tons of material of video, of audio, and written documents. So the fact that the police do not understand is that all those documents and all those materials are public, in the sense that almost everything has been published, and it is now on many, many servers, not only in Italy but also abroad, and so we really do not understand what they want to stop. But anyway, the fact that they came into social centers without a regular persecution mandate means that the freedom of information is under attack, and we are again in a very, very bad situation.
Aktivisti italijanske indie medije poudarjajo, da je napad policije na njih hkrati napad na svobodo informiranja, saj se s takšnim načinom obračunavanja zgolj poskuša ustrahovati aktiviste in ustaviti delovanje italijanskih neodvisnih medijev. Material, ki ga je policija zasegla v Bologni, Firencah, Torinu in Tarantu, pa je še vedno mogoče prebrati oziroma poslušati na strani italijanske indie medije, saj kot zatrjujejo, tam ni ničesar, kar bi morali skrivati.
Dnevi v Genovi so za italijanske neodvisne medije pomembni tudi zato, ker so vsi tovrstni mediji prav v Genovi združili moči in delovali skupaj, med drugim tudi v okviru radijske mreže GAP. Pod udarom italijanskih oblasti pa je bil tudi del GAPA, to je skupnostni radio Onda Rossa, ki v Rimu deluje že več kot 25 let in predstavlja pomemben del italijanskega gibanja.
Can you just tell me for the last question? Something more specific about the situation with Radio Onda Rossa. Why they want to close it down?
Well, the situation is just the Ministry of Communication revoked the license just because of a legal affair that is going on since the year 96. The license where Onda Rossa is at present broadcasting was given to another radio station in 96. Then for 2 years that radio station did not use that license, which went to Radio Onda Rossa. So now, after 6 years, that first radio station is asking again that license, and the Tribunal of Rome asked for the revocation of the license to Radio Onda Rossa. Of course, there are many legal ways to stop that decision, but again, we think that the decision of the Communication Ministry to persecute again free media represent the fact that we are living in a situation where the freedom of information is not guaranteed. So that's why we are now trying to use all the technical and legal ways to stop that decision.
Javnost je na dogodke ob julijskem vrhu držav G8 v Genovi ponovno spomnil italijanski notranji minister Claudio Scajola, ki je priznal, da je med vrhom izdal ukaz, naj policisti streljajo na kogarkoli, ki bi poskušal udreti na zaprto območje namenjeno zgolj udeležencem vrha.
Can you tell me what were the reactions in Italy to Scajola's statement that he ordered the shooting?
Well, of course, you can imagine that old people here was shocked about that, because when in July Scajola was called into the parliament to answer to many parliamentarian was asking many details, he was just denying the fact that the order was given. And after all those months with a certain, let's say, light way, now Scajola is giving that sort of confirmation and affirmation. So we think that is really a scandal, and the reactions were more or less very astonishing for all the people, of course, for all the people thinking and considering and analyzing what in fact Genoa was. Many people are completely, completely in the ends and in the under the power of the other, let's say, state-controlled media, and it is quite impossible for them to understand what Scajola was telling.
Italijanska indie medija, mreža neodvisnih novinarjev, ob vsem tem opozarja, da odgovorni ostajajo na svojih položajih kljub neuspešni preiskavi, ki naj bi našla dokaze za policijsko nasilje in razjasnila smrt Carla Giulianija, protestnika, ki so ga v Genovi ubili karabinieri.
All'amor tuo fanciulla, altro amor io preferia è un ideal l'amante mia a cui detti braccio e il mio cuore aborre sfida i potenti della terra e il mio braccio muove guerra al codardo all'oppressor Che amiamo l'eguaglianza, ci chiamaron malfattori, ma noi siamo lavoratori e padroni non vogliamo, dei ribelli sventoliamo le bandiere insanguinate e innalziamo le barricate. Per la vera libertà. Se tu vuoi, fanciulla cara, noi lassù combatteremo. E nel dì che vinceremo, braccio e cor ti donerò. Se tu vuoi fanciulla cara, noi lassù combatteremo. E nel dì che vinceremo, braccio e cor ti donerò. E nel dì che vinceremo. Braccio e cor ti donerò.
Italijanski premier Berlusconi, čigar država je s 1. julijem od Grčije za 6 mesecev prevzela predsedovanje Evropske unije, je že napovedal, da politično tekmovanje med Evropsko unijo in ZDA ni mogoče. Kot predsednik najbolj evropske države, to je Italije, si lahko velik evropejec in hkrati velik prijatelj največje demokracije na svetu, ZDA, je menil Berlusconi. Obenem se je zavzel za močno Evropo skupno obrambo, saj kot je poudaril, Evropa svoji obrambi namenja le 1% bruto domačega proizvoda, ZDA pa 4% in če imamo mednarodni mir in stabilnost, gre zahvala za to ameriškim izdatkom, dodaja Berlusconi.
Berlusconi bo prednostne naloge italijanskega predsedovanja povezave predstavil Evropskemu parlamentu, je pa že napovedal, da se ob začetku vodenja unije ne bo odpravil vse evropske prestolnice, kot veleva sedanja praksa. To tradicijo je treba spremeniti. Bilo nas je 6, danes nas je 25, kmalu nas bo 28 in na voljo sta tako telefon kot tudi internet, je prepričan.
Mednarodna nevladna organizacija za varstvo človekovih pravic Amnesty International je med tem nekaj dni pred prevzemom predsedovanja Evropski uniji strani Italije to državo pozvala naj področje človekovih pravic postavi na vidnejše mesto v svoji politiki ter oblikuje novo agendo za človekove pravice. Amnesty International uniji učita preveliko popuščanje pritiskom ZDA. Zdi se, da mednarodna skupnost, vključno z Evropsko unijo, komaj vzdrži nenehen pritisk ZDA, ki želijo spodkopati mednarodno kazensko sodišče in je pripravljena na kompromis celo pri jasnem neizpolnjevanjem mednarodnega prava, menijo pri Amnesty International. Kar pa se tiče zunanje politike, je Evropska unija na nižjih ravneh uspešna s političnim dialogom, sodelovanjem in pomočjo, vendar je njen vpliv na makropodročju zanemarljiv in celotna slika ostaja zelo žalostna, še poudarja Amnesty International.
Evropska unija po prepričanju Amnesty International tudi ne izpolnjuje obljub o človekovih pravicah doma. Zadnje leto poročilo tako navaja kršitve človekovih pravic v 13 članicah 15-terice, vendar Evropska unija kljub temu molči o kršitvah. Amnesty International opozarja, da bo, med tem, ko predlagano vključitev listine o temeljnih človekovih pravicah v novo ustavno pogodbo Evropske unije države pozdravljajo kot enega največjih dosežkov konvencije o prihodnosti Evrope, politika človekovih pravic v osnovi zgrešena, vsaj dokler Evropska unija na eno oko miži pri kršitvah, ki se dogajajo znotraj njenih meja. Na ravni Evropske unije je treba uvesti odgovornost, ki naj dopolnjuje primarno odgovornost držav članic za zaščito njihovih državljanov.
Italijansko predsedstvo mora po mnenju Amnesty Internationala prevzeti pobudo pri oblikovanju nove agende Evropske unije za človekove pravice, ki bi Evropski uniji omogočila, da se sooči z najbolj perečimi kršitvami človekovih pravic na svetu, ohrani varovanje pravic ob spopadanju s terorizmom in ilegalnimi migracijami ter uvede odgovornost za spoštovanje človekovih pravic znotraj razširjene unije.
Ali bo italijansko predsedstvo veliko slabše od grškega, bo najverjetneje pokazal čas, ali pa še tane. Bi pa se Slovenija po Grči lahko zgledovala vsaj v nečem. Grški minister za zunanje zadeve Papandreou je namreč že maja napovedal, da bodo pospešili dela za gradnjo mošeje v Atenah. To bo prva mošeja v Grči po koncu otomanske vladavine pred več kot 170 leti. V Atenah do sedaj ni delovala nobena mošeja, odkar je Grčija leta 1830 postala neodvisna. Grška prestolnica je tako edino glavno mesto kakšne države članice Evropske unije, ki še nima mošeje. Ljubljana pa bo najverjetneje še nekaj časa ostala brez nje, saj mošeja ni eden izmed pogojev za vstop v Evropsko unijo. Grčijo in še kaj je pokrila in spisala Gita, asistirali smo ji Nina, Katja in Bob Rok.